How many times have we listened to that song, and how does that ending always take me by surprise?
Every time.
Nearly missed my cue there. Christine, I've missed you.
Have you?
No, I see you every single day. I have missed the commenters, though.
Yes.
Hello. Hello. Hello, one. Hello, all.
Hello.
Can you hear us?
SidePod listeners.
Mm.
I think they can hear us.
Hey! That's good to know. How are your headphone levels? How's your volumes? Anything you need changing,
yep,
tweaking,
it's
fiddling
all
with?
Fine. I think you're going to complain that I'm quiet again. I'm sure of it.
Always the quiet one.
I know. They're the ones you have to watch out for, apparently.
Mm. Indeed. I got some comments. I can see some comments. And I will be pausing, as ever, to read them.
Yes.
Freaking people
have
out.
You sorted out your lift music yet?
No. No, I haven't sorted that out. Shoot.
Did you want a roll call?
Hey, why not?
Okay. In the comments, so far I have spotted Lukey, Pat, Bassano, Will, Stephen, Jordan, Robin, Little Purple Goth, Ryan and Ian, who is joining us for the first time.
Oh, hello, Ian. Hello. It's a full house.
Is
packed,
it?
Packed to
There's
the
There's always
rafters.
Room for more.
Oh, that is true. We are here. It doesn't feel so much like a Friday in the UK. We've had a bank holiday. I'm slightly confused.
Yeah, we had a day off. And also we had our Friday yesterday, didn't we, with a bit of wine here and there. So
You had more than a bit of wine, young lady.
Yeah.
But it was, in fairness, your first evening off for nearly 2 weeks, because back-to-back racing, it's killing us slowly.
No, it just was a shock to the system, I suppose. Back-to-back races, lots to do, but it's fun.
We have a podcast to record. Do you have an intro? Do you have a starting point?
Pretty much that same kind of conversation.
Okay, shall we do that? Shall we get this underway?
Yes. We've just had two back-to-back races, and now we've got back-to-back Feet Up Fridays. This almost never happens.
Am I right in saying this is the fifth podcast in 2 weeks that we have released? We are working very hard. We are working... that's a terrible introduction. Oh, hopeless. Give me that again.
Okay.
I'm going to blame my audio and say that I can't hear myself and then just fiddle with some buttons and pretend that's what the reason is, when in fact it's just that I'm rubbish. Hold on.
You know that no one can see you fiddling with the buttons, though. Except for me.
One, two.
And I know you're rubbish.
What?
Aww.
Oh, give me that introduction again. I'm sorry. I feel better about my volumes now.
Good. The rudeness.
Go.
We've just had two back-to-back races, and now we've got back-to-back Feet Up Fridays. This almost never happens anymore.
It feels like we are underway. The season is go, and it's been non-stop from the first green flag of the year. This is the first break we've had. A little bit of downtime for this podcast, but still, we are recording a new show for you. That's how hard we are working this year.
But after two races in a row, we've got 3 weeks off now, and then there's another two races, and then there's another 3 weeks off. There's just weird scheduling, this calendar.
It's a crazy calendar, but it makes sense for the people who have to endure it. If you're a Formula One team who has to pay personnel to go off overseas, back-to-back races makes a lot of sense. You can cram in a lot of action and cram in a lot of racing in a fortnight, and then you can get back to base and save yourself a lot of money. And in these troubled economic times, that is essential. So you can't hold it against, you cannot hold the calendar against the people who have to go out there and live it.
No. And having 3 weeks off gives us plenty of time to ponder everything that happened in Malaysia, because my goodness, that was a controversial race.
Did something happen?
I think we may have something to talk about this show. There was like a team orders row. I don't know if you noticed that bit. I think went quite under the radar.
F1 on the down low, I think, yeah. That was. I don't know if you spot. Only the most eagle-eyed of fans would have picked up that there was some consternation within the Red Bull camp. What is Christine's take on what happened in Malaysia?
I am so conflicted on this on pretty much every level, because on the one hand, I don't want to be mad at Vettel because he ignored team orders, and team orders are rubbish.
Okay.
And so as a fan, it's good to see them racing at the front. But then on the other hand, it just wasn't fair to Webber, and Webber was quite rightfully annoyed throughout. And it's all awkward because people are now making fun of F1 because there's this big storm that, oh my God, a driver was overtaking.
Mm.
How bad is that?
That is a terrible headline. There was a news story that F1 is... Hold on, I forgot what the headline was. There was a headline I caught from some site that there was a headline I caught this week that F1 was investigating the unfixing of a race.
Yeah.
As two drivers were told to hold station and one of them thought better of it. There were conflicts throughout the grid because not only were places one and two. Goodness me, I can't talk today. Oh.
Just take a breath.
Hold on.
There's no rush.
Do I want to go and talk about that? Do we want to go down the Mercedes route yet? I feel like I should. I went too quickly and haven't finished on the Red Bull thing. Or do we want to go? Do you want to talk 1 and 2, 3 and 4 team orders, or do you want to concentrate on Red Bull first? Should we stick with Red Bull?
Yeah.
Okay, that's where I went wrong. It is double. There is a lot of conflicts. No. Oh, man.
Would you like me to carry on?
Oh, yeah.
I'm not sure where we left off, though.
Hold on. I'm with you on this conflict because Sebastian Vettel, it is the big... With the exit of Michael Schumacher this season, he is Dick Dastardly.
He's the villain.
Formula One. He is the villain of Formula One, and we like Mark Webber. There isn't anybody... who follows Formula One regularly, who doesn't like Mark Webber, doesn't want to see him do well. The guy's been through a lot.
There's always someone.
Come on. He's come back from injury after injury, and he's had all that bad luck, and now he's in a win. Anyway, I can understand that it's nice to see Sebastian Vettel held to account and being told to hold station, and Mark Webber to go on and take a victory, a deserving victory, because up until the final stops, he had outraced Sebastian Vettel, and he deserved on those grounds he deserved to take the win. The team asked him to conserve his car, which he was doing, like a good driver that he is. And Sebastian Vettel had other ideas.
Do you know how you feel about
it? Yeah, that's the problem on this. I don't. If it wasn't for Vettel's decision to do what he did towards the end of the Malaysian Grand Prix, it would have been a dreadful end. It would have been boring as hell to watch four cars follow each other to the finish in procession. So we have to thank Sebastian Vettel for doing what he did to make the occasion interesting.
It spiced it up, and I love the drama. We haven't had proper drama like this for ages, and it's not stupid political, you know, nonsense. It's real relationship trouble, and it's really, really interesting. It's interesting to see how Horner has lost control of his star driver, if he ever had control, and how Vettel, he was cheering his victory until suddenly he realised, actually, I may have done something a bit wrong, and then he backtracked very quickly, and then he was saying that he didn't realise that it had been a team order situation, and then he made a mistake. But every step of the way, you just thought, yeah, you just regret that now, don't you?
Sebastian Vettel was never under any illusion that Mark Webber was genuinely that much slower than him. He knew the situation, and it was a calculated move. And any pretense to have made a genuine mistake is the one thing that I will hold against him. I think that was wrong to pretend that it was an accident and he didn't mean to make the pass, and somehow he got pushed offline by Mark Webber.
Yeah.
That's not on. Also, I'm not taking that from him.
Also, we should hold against him very early in the race when he said that he was on the radio saying, Mark is slow, get him out of my way. And that was early on in the race when they were racing for position. There weren't any team orders until after the final stop or whenever it was. And if he needed to get past, he should have just gone and got past. There shouldn't be a situation where they can say, yep, Mark, get out the way at the beginning of a race when it's all still to play for.
The person who came out of this the worst has to be Christian Horner. Because he's lost control he's lost the trust of Mark Webber, he's lost control of Sebastian Vettel, and to all intents and purposes, he's lost control and respect of the team, because nobody within the Red Bull camp will now look at Christian Horner as a team boss. Because nobody is really... Where does the team... Where does the buck stop in that team? Now, is Sebastian Vettel calling the shots? Is that how it works? The driver says, this is what I'm doing, and to hell with the strategy, to hell with whatever you tell me on the radio?
Well, yeah, and if he's not going to listen to what they say, what's the point in them saying anything? What's the point in them coming up with a strategy at all? Just let him go out there and figure it all out for himself, I guess.
I guess that's how it's going to be. You have to look at Christian Horner and say, I mean, his radio call was pathetic after Vettel had made the move. And I forget what it was just on the radio. This is silly, Sebastian. Oh, you know, let's stop this now. Come on, he's not a child.
Don't silly, Seb.
The guy is, he's not 8 years old. He's an adult. Yeah. He's a grown man. And you make the call to tell him to give the position back, and he gives the position back. That is how authority within a team works.
Well, it is, except I guess you get treated how you act.
Well, indeed. But conversely, as this was all playing out at Red Bull, a similar situation was unfolding in the Mercedes camp, but with different results.
Well, it was actually like the opposite situation. They gave out some team orders and they were obeyed. And in this situation, I thought they really shouldn't have been.
You could, okay, what's Christine's thoughts on the Nico Rosberg situation?
I just thought, Ross Brawn came on the radio and he was saying, we've got a big gap in front, we've got a big gap behind, just hold station, get to the end of the race, it's fine, stay behind Hamilton, you know, we're doing this on purpose. And that is not good to hear as a fan, because you'd rather see drivers going for it, but obviously they have to conserve their cars where they can. But I just thought, if they did have that much space, and Hamilton himself was... he admitted that he didn't feel like he should have been in that position, so he wasn't exactly going to get in the way. Their relationship is a bit better than the one at Red Bull at the moment. Why couldn't they have just let Rosberg pass and finished same 3 and 4, but in a different order?
By the looks of things, Mercedes made a major strategic error when they made the decision on how much fuel to put into Lewis Hamilton's car. I don't know... Where who was at fault for, or where the blame lies in that
Hamilton
situation.
Had to go painfully slowly at the end.
Well, almost from a third of the way through the race, the guy was told to save fuel.
Yeah.
And so he was racing with one hand tied behind his back. Mercedes didn't want to make him give up the place to Rosberg because they'd made a mistake. Obviously, Lewis was just driving his car.
Yeah.
So there was I can see that they didn't want Lewis to take any more pain than he had to take because of their mistake. So making him hold position was a wise thing to do, but Nico Rosberg looked to have enough pace and enough fuel to take the fight to Red Bull.
Well, afterwards, Lewis said, you have to be able to look at yourself in the mirror and say you won fair and square. In Malaysia, I don't feel like I won my spot fair and square, although I did drive a decent race. I don't feel spectacular about it.
Mm.
So Ross Brawn, he said they had nothing to gain by switching positions. Nothing at all, except the respect of the drivers, better racing, a happier set of teammates, same amount of points. Nothing to gain.
Well, if you were watching the Red Bull race unfold from the pit wall, you would have seen, and Ross Brawn would have known, he would have got information back from what we were hearing of what was going on at Red Bull. So he knew that they were on the back foot. He knew they were vulnerable. And if it wasn't for the fact that he was trying to keep Lewis Hamilton in front of Nico Rosberg, he could have sent his one race-ready car into the fight.
Yeah.
And he could have pushed them. And that could have... I don't understand. I know Mercedes haven't got the best car this year. And bagging a 3-4... points position finish is obviously is a good thing from where they are right now. He made that tactical call and he decided he was going to stick by it come what may. But they potentially threw away an additional podium position and, you know, one place higher.
Yeah, and I thought that the reason that these team orders exist, particularly between Vettel and Webber, is because they came so close to crashing when one was trying to overtake the other that, you know, they don't want that to happen. You don't want to lose out on all these points. But it became Hamilton was so slow at the end that Rosberg couldn't help but get close up behind him, and I thought it was more dangerous keeping them there.
Yes, the cars were very close. I mean, the finish was a Le Mans, classic Le Mans style finish where both cars crossed the line side by side, effectively a nice, great press shot. But I think. In Ross Brawn's seat, if I was sitting in his chair for the day, I would have let Rosberg go, because they would have it would have been It would have been because they would have, you know, they had more to gain than they had to lose, I think. There was such a big gap to those behind them. I would have gone that way.
Just making noise.
Oh, okay, because you're catching up. I'm just trying to think if there's anything else. There was something else that came to mind that I didn't mention then.
Was it about the Red Bulls or the Mercedeses?
One entity. That's not a great thing.
Item. Object.
It's not a, what is it? It's like the race director, I suppose.
Person.
Oh, no, that's okay. Yeah. Yes, person.
Job.
We must give credit to the race director on Sunday, though, because we were spoilt with team radio messages. Team radio was absent in the first race, and there were complaints that we weren't getting enough information fed back from the teams during that broadcast, but it became essential during the Malaysian Grand Prix. It told the story of the race.
Absolutely.
And the information that came from the team radio really paved the way for everything that we saw in the podium, or prior to the podium ceremony, post-race. And without that, I think fans would have been shortchanged. So it was nice to see that having lacked that in the first Grand Prix, that the race director made up for it in the second
one. You have to wonder if anything untoward was going on in Australia as well that we just don't know about.
I cannot believe anything as dramatic as that. There were team orders in Australia. We did manage to catch some. If you recall, Paul de Resta wasn't allowed to pass Adrian Sutil at the end of the Grand Prix. So we did manage to get a bit of radio traffic. And there is now a pit lane channel we can tune into to get the most from that. But all credit to those concerned.
Good. I like that. I don't think there's anything else on that front.
Is there not? Well, what about the apology and going forward? We should probably just discuss how it will change for the rest of the season.
Okay. Fine. The Mercedes pair seem to have got over their disappointment on Sunday quite quickly. Rosberg was on the radio saying, "Remember this one," which sounded quite ominous. "You owe me," basically.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to keep watch for that later in the season, see if the tables are turned. If they repay the favour, which I'm sure they will, because they seem to be.
Lewis genuinely seemed like he didn't feel he should have been where he was, and I can see that in the future, if he's not fighting for a championship, world championship, and if it's purely for points positions and not for a win, then again, I can see him repaying the favour, yeah.
But at Red Bull, things are a little bit trickier. Apparently Vettel has apologised to everyone. He's apologised to Webber. He's apologised to each and every person at the team, probably not individually, because he knows it's a team game, etc., etc. And people were quickly speculating whether Webber would see out the season at Red Bull, or, you know, I mean, we know that his time at Red Bull must be drawing to a close, so he's not got much to lose in terms of, you know, staying friendly with everyone. So it could have repercussions later in the season, but I think he will stick out the year with them because it's a good car and he's got nowhere else to go.
Well, he's got a contract, and a contract works both ways. The team can't just fire him, and he can't just walk away if the team don't want him to do that. So I don't have any doubt that Mark Webber will return to Red Bull for the next race and for the remainder of the season.
It's just going to be interesting to see how, if more situations arise where Vettel needs a hand, or if Webber himself is up there fighting for the championship, which could happen. Vettel's not going to get much help anymore, is he?
It is fabulous that it happened at this point in the season. It is so early in the season, and there's so many more races to come. We've got, another 17 races of those two drivers going at it. They may not be unchallenged in the same way that they were in Malaysia. Again, we may not have quite a as big a buffer, and therefore is quite an advantage. But we've got now the remainder of the season to see how this plays out, and it's going to be incredible. I mean, who is in charge at Red Bull? That's the number one question. What does Christian Horner have any authority? Can he regain any respect from those in charge?
I hope.
One thing I did want to pick up on, actually, before we move off of this subject, the lamest and most pathetic move of the entire weekend, perhaps of this season, is Christian Horner sending Adrian Newey up to the podium to pick up the trophy. That is without a doubt the most useless piece of management in the world. I mean, there was a shot of Christian just standing beneath the drivers on the podium as they were doing the post-race interview, looking just bewildered and for all of the world like he had no idea what had happened to him. And at that point, he should have been up there. He should have been on that podium. He should have been overseeing things instead of being down on the ground where he was. It was useless.
I felt so bad for Newey as well, because he's just stuck right in the middle. It's not his job. He doesn't make the decisions about strategy, I assume. He just builds a car.
Well, you assume, but then who does?
Well,
because, you know,
that is true.
Who is in charge there?
And there's a moment where Sebastian said something like, oh, it was obvious that this had to happen. And Newey's like, well, it wasn't that obvious, because he's just, you know, trying to be diplomatic, stuck in the middle. It's none of my business. I'm just here to pick up a trophy.
Poor Newey, he just wants to make fast cars. And he ends up in this middle of this political nightmare. Nobody wanted to be Adrian Newey on Sunday afternoon. And it's Christian Horner should be ashamed of himself for sending Newey into the lion's den.
Although, if Horner had gone into the green room thing, there may have been more fireworks, which would have been entertaining for us, probably not so good for the team relations, because it was all so, you know, the heat of the moment was really strong. You could have seen a punch up.
Do you think so? Do you think, well, so staying away from that, you think it may have helped the situation? I think it made it worse.
Okay. Yeah, so that is all I have for that.
Yeah, do you want a sweeper there?
Mm-hmm. The team orders kerfuffle came towards the end of the race for both of those teams. But there was also a bit of consternation at the beginning of the race when Ferrari and Alonso, one or other or both of those, decided not to pit despite the Spaniard having a broken front wing. And he crashed off in quite a spectacular way.
There were question marks following the decision not to pit Alonso as to whether or not it was a safe thing to have done, because as soon as Alonso's wing detached itself completely, it buried itself underneath the front of his car, and he completely lost control of his destiny. The car beached itself, thankfully, in the gravel, and the gravel trap did what gravel traps were supposed to do, and Alonso came to no harm. But trapped wings under the front of a chassis is a very dangerous thing to happen in Formula One, and the team clearly could see that the nose was would eventually fail, but they took the gamble that they would see if Alonso could string it out for a few more laps until a tyre window opened, until the track dried enough to run slicks without losing too many places. And I think it's commendable. I mean, Alonso putting, what was it? Alonso damaged that wing at the third corner, and he managed to complete the entire of that lap and start the next lap before he lost a single place. Now, I don't know any other driver who could put in that kind of drive, even though it was wet, even though the cars weren't going at full speed. The team obviously saw how well he was defending and decided that, well, it's probably worth leaving him out there.
It's crazy, because at this point in the season, it's like, oh, okay, he's retired. Doesn't mean anything. The championship is still wide open. Later on in the season, when he loses it by a point again, they are going to regret this so much. Alonso knows that for the last few years, he knows what it is to retire from a race and have that be the difference in winning or losing a championship. If they'd have pitted him and then brought him back out, Alonso in that car, he could have got himself back up into contention for something. And I just think it was just a risk they didn't need to take.
Yes. Oh, fine. It was a massive gamble, a huge gamble, the biggest gamble, and they lost spectacularly. But the guy they had in the car, if he could, let's play out Ferrari's ideal situation. Alonso lost a place to Webber on the main straight after lap one. If he'd have retained third place until the end of lap two, losing one more place on that straight, if he'd have come into the pits on the next lap, a dry line was forming. He could have ended up, I think Sebastian Vettel pitted on lap, was it four or lap five for his tyres? And Vettel obviously went on to win the race. Alonso could easily have won that race just by driving an incredibly defensive strategy if the wing had held on. And the pit call could have come at a decent time, a more optimum time, and he could have gone on to win the race. That, you know, that's 25 points they were going for, as opposed to if he would have had to pit after lap one, it would have been the lower points.
He would have ended up at the back of the grid, but this is a race in which Emma Rusher finished 13th. So how far back would Alonso really have been by the end?
We can only guess. But I don't think he would have been in line for a win. Whereas if the guy could have held on for just two more laps, without losing a significant number of places, he could have still been in contention for the win.
Yeah. But plus, it would have been far more entertaining to see him fight through the field. And the fact that he crashed out so early on meant we had all those issues with the drivers and teams at the end, because Alonso wasn't up there in between them.
Well, I think post-race Alonso was laughing. He was tweeting. He was tweeting away that he was chuffed that this was going on, and
he'd missed
he was
out on that.
Keeping out of the way of everything.
Team orders at a team that isn't Ferrari.
Absolutely, he was well away from it and loving every minute of it.
But also, it wasn't just Alonso being out of the fight that didn't help. Button, McLaren had another pit stop failure that they are so known to do, and that dropped Button out of the fight as well. And so that's why we ended up with all these teams at the front with the teammates next to each other.
Well, it was amazing that Jensen was in any position to score a podium. That, given how bad that car was in testing and in the first race, to have made those kind of gains was quite spectacular, actually. I mean, yes, they threw it away. McLaren threw it away on a silly
wheel
pit
nut.
Mistake, which they were prone to doing last year and haven't managed to resolve yet. But equally, it was unbelievable to see Kimi Räikkönen so far back. Yes, he had a silly qualifying penalty, which put him out of position. But this was the race-winning car from Australia, had no pace at all. It was going wheel-to-wheel with a Sauber and coming off worse.
Yeah, Eric Boullier said that they weren't surprised that the pace was inconsistent, and they're expecting it to be like that all this year, and they're putting the blame squarely on the tyres and the temperature. But surely, if you are a team principal, you shouldn't be reveling in the fact that you're inconsistent. You should be saying, okay, this is something we need to work on.
We don't have a clue. Yay!
Exactly.
And it's we know we don't have a clue. Yay!
We won a race and now we're almost falling out of the points. That's okay. We'll live with that. That's just the way it is. No, work harder. I don't understand.
Yeah, I mean, the Mercedes is a consistent car. It's not consistently fast, but it's consistently within range of a podium. The McLaren was faster than it had been, but the Lotus definitely took a major hit. I thought Romain put in a good drive. In a car that wasn't ideally suited to conditions, he put in a strong drive. But Kimi definitely failed to impress from his highs of the week, you know, compared to his highs the week before.
Yeah, he was running all over the track. A lot of the drama, like a lot of the strategy came from the fact that there were four pit stops for most of the drivers.
Yep.
Three or four was the choice, really. And when you have four pit stops, you're bound to see a lot more action in the pit lane. We saw Button's issue, as we mentioned. Vern had an unsafe release that the team were penalised for. There were at least two other unsafe releases that the stewards didn't even bother looking at. And also, Force India had a bit of a problem.
Yes.
I felt
a major problem for Force India, actually.
I felt really bad for Paul Di Resta, because
the guy can't catch a break.
For the second race in a row, he was stuck looking at the rear wing of his teammate.
I think Paul de Resta was the only man I felt more sorry for than Mark Webber, because he was the guy who also did everything right. He did everything that he could do. He was screwed over by a delayed pit stop for his teammate. He was stacked behind Sutil when Sutil's first stop went wrong.
Yeah.
Then he had a fast enough car to haul himself back into the point, and he was running incredibly well when his pit stop, his second stop, then went awry. And eventually, so much time was lost in the pit lane. The cars
were going to explode.
The cars generated so much heat standing still because it was endless. I mean, it was like the you know, you like thought a for a minute that Force India car is never going to get going again. Eventually, they had to retire both the cars, which is a shame.
I was really disappointed to see them retiring because they really do look like they have some good pace. They can fight near the top of the midfield, probably moving upwards even further. But they just, all these little bits keep going wrong and stopping them from doing it.
Yes, it's looking like a pretty handy damn chassis. It's got an awful lot of pace in both of the driver's hands. Obviously, Adrian Sutil led the Grand Prix for the first time in his career at the last race. And this time, Paul de Resta was putting in some stunning pace, some stunning laps. And it's not coming together for them.
Oh, I was going to say something else about Paul de Resta.
Okay. Give me a clue.
Oh, no, that's it. The investigation the team did into the problem, it's some kind of new wheel nut system they've got this year, and they're not going to go back to the old one. They have pinned it down on the fact that it wasn't working in the hotter temperatures.
Okay.
Which is fine that you know that, but we've got hotter temperatures again in two races' time in Bahrain.
Yeah.
So I hope they have it fixed by then.
Well, this is, I guess, the issue. Teams have been reluctant to increase the amount of testing they do pre-season. And I think part of that is because the temperatures that they see during testing aren't representative of the entire year.
Yeah.
Essentially, it's too darn cold in Barcelona in February.
Winter testing.
Well, yeah, to get any kind of gauge of what they're going to come up against during the season. And in Force India's case, if it's heat-related, if the problems are related to the temperatures that they find themselves in Malaysia, then that's something they couldn't have discovered during testing, and that's unfortunate. Now that they've seen that, now that they've got that data, they should have, and they've got this three-week gap, which is plenty of time to resolve a minor problem like a wheel nut, they should be fine for the next race. I'm sure they won't see a recurrence of that.
Hopefully. We mentioned that Verne had an unsafe release situation where his Toro Rosso crashed into a Caterham. So that was an unfortunate moment. But otherwise, apart from that, he did really well. He started 17th, so qualifying still a problem. Mm-hmm. But then he crashed into someone in the pit lane, and I think he had to have a nose change because of that, possibly. So there was a delay there anyway. And he still managed to finish 10th in the points, picking up 1 point.
And his teammate, Paul Ricciardo, he didn't finish again. Is that two retirements in two races?
That is, yes.
That is a shame. That is not good. So yay for Verne and boo for Paul Ricciardo.
Also doing well, Bianchi, yet again. He is being super impressive in a rubbishy old Marussia.
What a guy. I would have loved to have seen what he could have done in that super fast Force India. Clearly, he wouldn't have finished this Grand Prix regardless, but if Adrian Sutil can lead a race in the Force India, imagine what Bianchi could do.
Yeah, it's quite fun to see a fast driver at the back of the grid. I mean, that's not fun to see, but people like Alonso, they all started in the lower teams, mm-hmm. and Massa and people like that, and worked their way up. And I don't think we've seen anyone recently in the backmarker teams that has had that amazing spark of, oh, they're going to go far.
I think so. There is a lot of correlation between Alonso's first year in Formula 1 and Bianchi's first year in Formula 1. Obviously, Alonso was in the Minardi, and he outdrove that car, something rotten. And that's what Bianchi's doing in the Marussia. And I can see Bianchi causing a lot of problems for Caterham this year.
I mean,
huge problems.
It's still early days, obviously, but he finished 15th in Australia and 13th here, which 13th place already for Marussia is going to be hard for Caterham to beat that.
That 13th place is the magic number, isn't it? That's the place, the position that they're all aiming for. And Bianchi's managed to secure that.
Well, they're aiming for 12th now.
Yeah, in his second race. That's incredible. So keep an eye on him. Two races. It's still too early to declare. You know, he's obviously a future star, but he's not put a foot wrong yet.
he's doing well so far. And yeah, he missed out on the Force India seat. And because of that, Force India have had to confirm Mercedes engines for next year and going forward.
Well, I thought, yeah, the whole deal with the delay with announcing and then eventually not announcing Jules Bianchi was that they wanted some kind of Ferrari engine deal for 2014 and beyond. And they didn't get that. They didn't sign Bianchi. And now they're going with Mercedes.
Yeah, I wonder what order things happened in. Did they decide the engine deal wasn't on, so then they went with Soutil? Or did they really, really want Soutil and they've sacrificed a whole engine deal for that?
I don't know, actually.
Is Soutil worth that much?
Well, it depends. Also, if you were Force India and you were looking at how good Bianchi's been in his first two races, you might also have a few pangs of regret there.
Oh, dear.
I mean, Soutil is done well, thankfully.
Yes.
Which might mitigate some of that pain. But you might be casting a wary eye down the pit lane thinking, darn it, we threw that one away. We gave Bianchi away.
That was good.
Good.
I like that.
Good.
I think we did that together well.
I've totally ignored the comments because I can barely concentrate on talking at the moment. I do apologise to people who turned up to discuss stuff and we.
Well, you seem to have got over the hump now, I must say.
I was just asleep. I was so just tired, really. Just overworked. Mm. That's what it is. 5 podcasts, 2 weeks, too much work. I found my limit.
This is it.
This is the end. Yeah.
Well, in that case, I would blame Red Bull because it had to be talked about.
Right. Red Bull, but Red Bull could save me if I had a drink of it.
Oh. Aww.
They could dig me out of this hole. Tell me what's going on in the comments because I blatantly ignored them for an entire discussion.
I think the last thing you need is Red Bull right now. Someone whose name is a bit like McLaren but has got numbers in it has just arrived for the first time listening live as well.
Hooray! I'm sorry, I'm so rubbish on your first time listening. Sorry, Ian. Sorry, McLaren.
It's McLaren with a 4 and a 3.
I promise to be better in the future if you promise to come back.
Aw. It's fine. We're getting there.
I had a brain freeze.
Yeah. Sometimes that happens. You know, we are only human. I know we may sound like robots at times.
I've never thought that of you. Never have I thought, Christine, she sounds like a robot.
No. Okay. That's, yeah.
Kimmy, definitely.
Yeah, that's true. Did Massa not start at a lower team? I don't know. What do I know? Where did he start?
Massa started in a Sauber?
Oh, okay. Not like a Ferrari.
No.
He didn't do a Hamilton.
He replaced somebody like... did he replace Kimi? He might have replaced Kimi. I don't know.
I don't know. I don't know stuff.
We're not big on history.
No.
It's a trouble to remember what happened last Sunday. And then talk about
it. Now they want us to string sentences together and be factually correct. I mean, this is just too much. Madness.
Goodness me. Good. Okay, so I've not missed vast amounts in the comments. People are still there and still listening, which is good.
Yeah, they haven't switched off yet. But there's some interesting things you might want to catch up later.
Okay, I tend to do that.
Do you? Mm. That's very good. I don't because I multitask.
Show off.
Yeah. He replaced Rubens.
Did he? Did he?
I didn't mean to infer that Sauber was a lower team because I didn't know it was Sauber. I just assumed it was something at the back. I didn't know. I knew that he didn't come in at the front like Hamilton did. That was basically what I was...
He did replace Kimi.
I was...
Who said he replaced Rubens? He didn't replace Rubens, Lukey, did he? No. He did it Ferrari. Not at Sauber.
Anyway, what is next? I've got one more thing here.
Hold on. Okay, I need to go into that, I think. Right, I've also got this slightly messed up, but that's just making my life worse. Okay, I'm back with it. Take it away, Christine.
Did we have a sweeper? Do we need another one? Those are the highlights and or lowlights, depending on your opinion, of the Malaysian Grand Prix, I think. It's worth mentioning that when there are races on, you should be on sidepodcast.com following along in the live comments because lots of fabulous people watch the race and comment at the same time, and there's insight and people spot things that you haven't spotted. So that's always good fun. Also, the Fact Bike Fact Box is there to guide you along the way with tweets and team radio and facts in the fact box. Yep, so I'm doing, so far, I've done every qualifying and every race.
And do you intend to continue?
That is the plan.
That's awesome.
But as ever, I'm not promising anything. And the other thing I was going to say is it's probably a good idea, once the race is over and you've seen it and you've mulled over how it went, to visit the Rate the Race page, where you can give the race your choice of 5 stars. Whether you thought it was good, 5 stars. Whether you thought it was rubbish, 1 star. And we also do things like Driver of the Day and some other little rating things. Like, for instance, this week we want to know your opinion on Vettel's actions and Mercedes team order.
Thus far, how have SciPodcast readers rated the Malaysian Grand Prix?
The Malaysian Grand Prix is sort of around between a 3 and a 4 out of 5, I'd say. It's verging on about 75%.
I could not disagree with that.
I think I gave it a 4 for the drama. As a race, it probably was more of a 3. But that's always available, and I will put a link in the show notes because I think the Malaysia one is still open. If you haven't voted already,
we should close that too, but if you want to give people an extra day to vote, then do so.
Yeah. One other thing I wanted to mention about the race weekend, there is an FIA memo going to teams ahead of the weekend that it's something about the DRS enabled disabled messages and how they are not getting through from the FIA to the teams. Now, I thought this was a problem in Australia because they had power cuts and it was a problem there, wasn't it? The rain got in the way.
The TV compound died. The power in the TV compound went out prior to the race.
I thought there was a problem there and the FIA issued a memo. But it seems like it's an ongoing problem because the memo was there again from Malaysia. And it says, due to continued reliability problems with the telemetry link between race control and the cars, we will again be disabling this with immediate effect. And then it lists out all the ways that because they've disabled this link, they have the ways they will get communicated for DRS on, DRS off, okay, et cetera, et cetera. And yep. I don't know. I just found it a bit odd. Something is broken at the FIA.
I wonder if this is related to McLaren's new ECU or if it's another unrelated circumstance that's going on.
It also makes things just a bit more complicated because it feels like there's a whole other page of rules that the teams have got to learn.
Yeah, well, at least they've got a workaround. They don't have to switch the entire thing off altogether because that would be embarrassing. The show does at least go on.
That's true.
Even if there's a number of workarounds in place.
So I just thought it was something to keep an eye on in future and see whether they ever get it fixed or not.
This 3-week break is going to be a boon to everybody.
Yeah.
Force India.
There's a lot to work on.
Force India and their wheel nuts. You've got Red Bull and their relationships to be repaired, and also the FIA and their timing and telemetry links.
Talking of having a lot to work on, didn't we find a bit of team radio from Nico Hülkenberg that was quite revealing?
I do have that, actually. This hasn't been mentioned anywhere, as far as I'm aware, but F1 Pit Radio picked up on this.
It was Hülkenberg's first race of the year because he had to sit out Australia, so it was his first chance to really get to grips with the car.
And this is during the cool-down lap.
Yeah, thank you, guys. I think that's such a bad job, but I can't tell you. I don't know where to start with so many things to improve. I don't have to explain about the radio, I think. That is unacceptable. Unbelievable.
So there's a lot of things to improve on the car, and also the radio is unacceptable. Is he having a Kimi moment?
That is unacceptable, unbelievable. We don't know what.
I know what I'm doing.
I would imagine that
we've got a little Nico Diva on our hands.
Actually, you could maybe make a case for many things that could be wrong there. It's good, though, that he's obviously got a lot of ideas to improve the car.
Yes.
Because it's not this year's Sauber was not proven to be as quick out of the blocks as last year's. And much like the Williams, there's pace to be found and things to be improved. And Nico's on the case, clearly.
Williams have someone new in charge who might help them. Not quite in charge. But Claire Williams has taken over a new role. It's a newly created deputy team principal role. So helping out her father with the day-to-day running of the team. Essentially, she's stepping into the succession plan that Toto Wolff so quickly stepped out of.
I remember Claire when she was just the PR person.
Yeah, I know. She used to sign the press releases.
How she has climbed that ladder. That's good. We almost certainly will be looking, unless she really screws up her deputy role, at having two female team principals in Formula One in the future.
It's good stuff. Williams are doing well on the whole bringing females into the sport thing with Susie as well.
Mm. Yes, a team to keep an eye on. They are moving with the times, Williams, and it's good to see Claire move up the ladder. I love her.
Yes,
we
you
love
do.
Her. We love at Side Podcast. We love Claire Williams quite a lot.
Do we?
Sometime podcaster, soon to be team principal.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah.
I forgot she was on the podcast.
Yeah.
That is so true.
Ryan says he likes Esteban more now. It is worth mentioning, actually, right, Claire, that I think that when we met her, it was... Isn't it like 7 o'clock on a Friday night, or actually maybe like 9 o'clock on a Friday night, 2 days before Christmas?
Was that when we went to the factory?
Yeah, thing? And she was working constantly from 7 p.m. till 9 p.m. and then spent half an hour, put half an hour aside for a chat afterwards with us. And so, yeah, she worked incredibly hard.
I did buy a pen though, so it was worth a while.
That's not going. That's
a pen and a baseball cap.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And did that help their budget that year? I don't think it did. But all credit to her. She is lovely. Anything else from the comments?
Some people are saying that a rodent chewed through the cables
twice.
But
come on,
I don't understand why that would happen in two different locations.
Why would they have the same problem at two different races? And no. That cannot be true. I don't believe that. I mean, maybe it did. Maybe a rodent actually chewed through a cable, but I cannot believe that the problems were caused by that. Why wouldn't you just put a new cable in? Just put a junction box in and join it back together. That's nonsense. Who said that? Tell them they're talking nonsense. Don't believe a word of it. No one loses an entire telemetry link because a rodent chewed through a cable.
Ted said it. Robin's reporting that Ted said it. So Ted... is talking nonsense. That's what you're telling me. Oh, someone tweeted me earlier and said, now that we watch Sky, we have to bring back Ted News.
Actually, that's a fair point. Do I even have that jingle?
Probably not at the moment, and we don't have any Ted News, but it's worth keeping in mind. I could do it live for you.
I don't even know if I mean, we'd have to make the jingle again. I'm pretty sure I deleted it in disgust when he went to Sky, didn't I?
Probably. Ted was dead to you. Now he's your BFF again.
He's not. I genuinely don't care.
The thing about the Ted notebooks, whatever they're called, he just seems to be having a nose about. They don't seem all that insightful.
No, I did like, let's have a look at what's in this box. Oh, a canoe was actually a highlight of the Malaysian Grand Prix. But at the same time, I sort of think Ted works better under constraints. And he's not constrained.
Yeah.
He's not. I haven't enjoyed a single Ted notebook this year, I have to say. I'm sure he's still lovely, but I mean, when I heard Crofty, I was like, yay, Crofty again. Oh, so good to hear Crofty. Still as good as he always was. Not the same reaction to Ted.
Maybe not Ted News then. Not yet. We'll see. We'll give him a chance, see what
especially
happens.
Especially if he's genuinely swallowing rodent chewed through our cable. I mean, what did they do? Capture it in Australia, ship it to Malaysia and let it loose again? Come on. Teddy.
It's like Will.
It is like Will. Yes.
It's not like Will, just the way we said it. I'm not saying... No. I've just dug myself a massive hole. I don't want to... No. Let's move on. Did we have a sweeper there? Because we need one. In non-F1 news, or tangentially related, Michelin of Bibendum fame.
You like Bibendum.
I do. They are going to be, or want to be, I can't remember what it is actually. Hang on.
Give me a clue what you're talking about. Are we talking about Formula E?
Yes.
Michelin have been confirmed.
Okay. I missed out the crucial bit of information. Let's do that again.
Okay.
In non-F1 news, or tangentially related news, Michelin are going to be the sole tyre supplier of Formula E.
Formula E, I'm a big fan, Formula E. I like what I'm hearing about what's coming. And I was a big fan of Michelin in tyres in Formula One.
Well, I like it if it means we get to see more Bibendum, because yes, he's my favourite.
Yes, yes. It's worth, though, pointing out that when Michelin dropped out of Formula One, it was because they didn't see the value in being a sole tyre supplier. They wanted to be a competitive...
The last great tyre war.
Yeah, they liked the tyre war. They wanted to prove that they could make better tyres than the competition. So there must have been a change of heart somewhere within Michelin management. Or maybe, just maybe, they looked at the job Pirelli were doing in Formula One, making a success of being a single tyre supplier, and thought, actually, that's a decent...
It is possible.
That's a decent business model.
Yeah.
We'd like a bit of that action.
They watched Bridgestone. Let's not do it like that.
No. Nope.
They watched Pirelli. Ooh. Mm.
I suspect the people at Michelin watched the Bridgestone sole tyre supplier and went, yeah, we told you so. Yep. Knew that was going to happen. Did they? They may have competed also for the F1 bid, but weren't given it for whatever reason, probably down to money.
Or for PR reasons. Mm. They aren't popular
no.
at the moment.
No.
It's still quite fresh.
And so whatever happened, whatever changed, they are now the chosen ones within the FIA. They are the sole tyre supplier for Formula E. And maybe, just maybe, they might be interested in coming back to Formula One. Who knows?
When is the Formula E thing?
Is it 2014? I think the series gets going next year.
Interesting.
They've got chassis, they've got engines, and they've got tyres. I don't think they've got any drivers yet. That may come later. I don't think any driver's been announced.
Might need some of those.
Mm.
Is it,
I could be wrong. I'm not paying that much attention to it.
Is it a standard spec thing?
To start with, the plan is to have...
I don't know anything about it.
The plan is to have homologated chassis, perhaps from two suppliers, but a single design. I'm not sure on that. Not sure on the specifics. Mm-hmm. And then eventually allow competitive designs and parts to be introduced once the series has achieved whatever goals it's set out for it. So once it's got to a certain majority, then they'll open the rule book a bit more.
McLaren says, Formula E is a good idea implemented badly. Why are they going for two cars per driver rather than hot swapping batteries? That two cars per driver thing, I did hear that. That's a bit weird, isn't it?
Yes.
Instead of like Le Mans switching of a driver, the driver gets out and gets in another car.
I can explain sort of why. I think, is because what they are trying to promote is the super fast chargers. So that's the angle, is you can charge a car up within 20 minutes. So you start your race and do, I'm guessing here, like a dozen laps. You pit, pick up a second car. What will be very visible is the first car will then be plugged in. And probably a ridiculously overdramatic, massive plug. Do you know what I mean? They're going to make a big show of it. Maybe fireworks will pop out of it when it's charged. Maybe there will be
That doesn't sound like a good idea.
There might be an indicator showing how fast it's charging. There's going to have to be...
And then they pick it up again at the end.
Well, then you do another dozen laps in your second car, and then you get back into your first car, and magically it's charged up with lots and lots of power by this super fast charging battery. That's the thing. So you could have a hot swap battery, which you'd open the engine cover, lift out the battery, put in another battery, but... You're not highlighting, it's not, that doesn't have any crossover to the everyday users, the everyday buyers, effectively. What they're trying to sell is you can buy an electric car and you can charge it really quickly, almost as quick, but not quite as quick as if you were to fill up your car with petrol. Not quite that quick, but the plan is to get there.
So this is a series that are having refueling, in a sense.
Yeah. Yeah, it is, definitely is refueling. It's just refueling of a battery, and it's not actual fuel. But yeah, that's so. What it's, to my understanding, everything about it will be all about how it translates or how it relates to the everyday punter, because all the people who are interested in working on this are manufacturers who have things to sell to the average consumer, like fast charging batteries. So that it's technologically relevant to road cars.
Whenever I hear about it, it just makes me think of him racing his Prius.
Who?
In Horrible Bosses. I don't win a lot.
Just drag racing in a Prius. Yeah, it's quite...
Yeah, I don't win a lot. Anyway, let's move on.
How is it green to have twice as many cars as you need? It's not green. No, it's not. No, it's not green. That isn't. No, that's not the angle. I don't think that's the angle. Because batteries aren't a green solution, because after they've seen so many charges, you have to dig a hole and bury them. Batteries are not a brilliant renewable source of energy. But what they are is, what they're doing is, they are reducing our reliance on fossil fuels, effectively. That's the main advantage. Not that, well, I guess that eventually they will run out, but not that there's any danger of running out right now.
Stephen says most of the race is going to be spent watching drivers run from one car to another. Now, I think he's saying that like it's a bad thing, but that sounds amazing.
That sounds like, that's fun. That's like the Le Mans swap, but yeah, the driver gets out and then he gets another car. That's okay. I'm okay with that. I was genuinely confused.
Like the people running off the grid is my favourite bit of a whole race. The mechanics running off.
Yeah.
I like a bit of running.
They should definitely turn that into a race. Yeah. There must be some way of getting, making that a competition. There has to be. So there's a missed opportunity there. But the press release from the Formula E, from the Formula E organisation was confusing when it said there are four cars and two drivers. Because that in no other form of motorsport have I ever heard of that.
You thought they'd got that wrong.
I genuinely thought it was a typo in the press release, but no, that is what they're doing. It sounds ridiculous. Anybody reading that, the first time you watch it, you'll just think that they're mental. But there is actually a very good reason for doing it. Eventually.
Well, there's a reason anyway.
eventually the batteries will last a whole race, presumably. That's also where I guess they're trying to get to. I'm guessing it's a temporary thing. Eventually, they'll be able to get big enough batteries with a large enough charge and a light enough usage to last an entire race. But I don't know. Yeah, solar's another thing. They may or may not have, depending on what they go with, but you could potentially have solar charge. But then if you're going to run it in London, you know, get a bit of rain and the cars won't have any power.
They're going to run it in London.
They are doing what Crashed Ice do, which is they're taking the races to the fans. They're doing what we want, which is don't send fans to a field in the middle of nowhere where there's no transport links and everyone sits in a queue for 9 hours because it rained. Scrub that. Take the race to Hyde Park and run it around there, or take it to Rome and run it around the city. Take it to places where there are strong... there's a sensible amount of infrastructure for dealing with large fans, for bringing a large fan base to get people in and out very quickly. They're going to take it to city centres, just like Crashed Ice. It's the same model. It's very interesting. I mean, you know, Side Podcast, it's right upside Podcast Street.
The weather we've had recently, I reckon we could have a Crashed Ice, you know,
with the cold.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm really excited by it because it's everything that. Everything that Formula One has got wrong appears to be being fixed in Formula E. It's in the high street. It's basically silent.
Did you say it's basically silent?
Yeah. That's good.
Okay.
To my ears.
Yeah.
I hate noise. Oh, I hate the noise of Formula One cars. I hate going to Formula One Grand Prix and not being able to hear myself think for 2 hours.
The people are going to go
I don't
mad.
Care. They're wrong. Formula One is far too loud. It's far too noisy. And I like to go somewhere and have a conversation and hear myself think. And I can't do that at a Grand Prix because they make a god-awful racket. Anyway. And also, imagine Jake Humphrey walking down a pit lane. Someone fires up an electric engine. You don't hear it.
Well, that would be brilliant.
Isn't that what we want? All of our complaints about Formula One are being fixed in Formula E. Mark my words, it's going to be something to keep an eye on. If it doesn't go the same way as GP2. Not GP2, F2, which was a bit of a disaster. That was the FIA's last brand new championship. And it could go that way. There's no guarantee it's going to be successful. But F2 replicated all the things that were wrong with Formula One, going to these circuits in the middle of nowhere that nobody cared about. And Formula E should fix some of that, in theory.
Okay.
It's not on public roads either. No, it's going to be like Race Champions. It's going to be like pre-built circuits. They're going to lay tarmac down for an afternoon, and they're going to race around tarmac with high curbing or whatever, like a kart track. I don't think it's going to be. You're not going to go past like Big Ben or anything. I don't think that's going to be the case.
Not like do the London Marathon route.
No, I don't, because I think the cars are going to be reasonably small. I don't think they're going to be as big as F1 cars. I don't think you're going to need as much space. It should be reasonably nimble. And you can run it anywhere. And because there's no noise complaints, because nobody is going to stand up and say, hey, you're not running that noisy thing outside my bedroom, they can literally run it anywhere. You could run it almost, I think it would probably be too big to run inside a stadium, but you could run it in a reasonably large open space.
Interesting.
And, you know, cities are going to be up for it to, you know, bring in the tourism.
Watch this space.
Definitely. I've lost the plot. I don't know what on earth we were talking. We spent so long talking about Formula E. I don't know where we got to. Sorry, you're looking at me as if I'm going to know.
No. I was just looking at you.
Okay. Hi.
If you have any feedback about what you've heard us discussing today, there are several ways you can get in contact with us. Firstly, you can leave a comment on the show notes and share your opinion with everyone. You can send us tweets to @SidePodcast, or you can send me an email, Christine@SidePodcast, or a voicemail to Christine@SidePodcast or 01212887225. Paul has sent me an email last week and it said, just caught up with the last Feet Up Friday and thought I'd make a few comments. Firstly, I love that you managed to mention both what a nice guy Sebastian Vettel is and how it was a shame that team orders had played a part in the outcome of the race with Force India. Priceless foresight.
Did we say that?
I think we must have done that.
Sebastian Vettel is a lovely guy until he gets into a Formula One cockpit, puts on that helmet and closes his visor. Then he's no longer a nice guy.
Secondly, you also talked about how to get the practice sessions off to a quicker, more interesting start. Well, why not introduce some kind of fun event prior to practice where non-F1 cars use F1 tyres, maybe the used ones from the last race, and do some drifting, etc. to entertain the crowd. This would put some rubber down and clean the track up a bit. They could even make the cars F1 race stars style with oversized helmets and everything.
I am not against that idea.
So anything to get the rubber down, I suppose, if that's the problem.
Yes, it wouldn't. If it was raining, it would be a problem. I don't know what drifting is like in the rain. I guess it's maybe better. That would be worth investigating. The issue is, you wouldn't get current Formula One stars involved in that because obviously they're undergoing preparation for practice and they're looking at data and stuff like that.
But if they're wearing big bobbleheads, it doesn't really matter who is.
I suppose not, but what fans are paying to see is their favourite F1 driver on track, and what's not happening in pre-practice is that they're not seeing that in free practice. You want to, if you're a Spanish fan and you're in Spain and you go to Barcelona and you turn up to free practice one on a Friday, what you don't want to see is some guy with a bobblehead go around drifting. You want to see Fernando Alonso in his car doing what he does.
Yeah, you would see the bobbleheads first, and then that would clear up the track enough so that the actual people you've come to see would come out straight away instead of waiting. That's okay. The point. We're not replacing one with the other. One is happening before so that they put loads of rubber down on the track and then the current drivers have no excuse.
That's perfect. Okay, I'm with you. I'm with Paul. Is it Paul? Paul, I'm with you on that suggestion, but what do you do when it's anything other than dry weather? Because, for example, Silverstone last year, nobody went out at all because it rained constantly. So that's still an issue that needs resolving. That's not acceptable. That's not giving fans value for money.
I think it's a genius idea. There aren't enough bobbleheads in the world.
No. True. I can't argue with that logic.
That's all the stuff I have except for the one thing about SoundCloud, which is yours if you want to attempt to talk about it.
I'm fine talking. I've woken up now.
Okay.
I was totally dozy to start with, but I'm okay now. Right. I can talk.
A sweeper, and then I guess you'll go into that because I'm not really sure.
I done got some exciting technical stuff to discuss.
Yay!
Which means if you're only here for the Formula One, you may as well switch off now. But I'll be as brief as I possibly can. We may have found the ideal solution for archiving and distributing our audio shows in the shape of SoundCloud. SoundCloud.com is something we've been using for several years. I think 2009 was when we originally signed up to it. It was, for a very long time, too expensive for our meager budget. We couldn't afford to pay their pro prices, which is what the pricing tier we'd fall into for the amount of shows that we produce. Very recently, SoundCloud have had a change of heart. They've reduced their prices, and they've enabled unlimited uploads. And what that means is this week we have switched over from our current service provider to SoundCloud. So we moved all of our shows over to their streaming service in order to test this out. And if you downloaded the last couple of shows, reasonable chance you actually used that service. It's a bit quicker, actually, which is good. It's good for listeners because they get the shows faster, but it's good for us because it costs us less money, and it means we can produce more and more content without fear of hitting our download limits. For at least the last 3 or 4 years, I think on average every month we distribute about a terabyte of downloadable content, and that means once we hit that limit, we have to pay money every time we go over it, and that's been restricting the amount of things we can make. And as of now, as of this point onwards, assuming that our tests are successful, that's one restriction that's been lifted from us. So we could make lots and lots and lots of lovely side podcast audio shows this season without fear of bankrupting ourselves.
Little Purple God said, how many years have I been telling you about SoundCloud? Yes, but it was too expensive.
No, we know about SoundCloud. We have been a SoundCloud user. We couldn't afford it. I think it was like £290 for their pro account. And that allowed you to upload like 5 shows or something a month. And we make more shows than, way more shows.
Well, as you've just discussed, we made 5 in a fortnight.
Yeah, we made 5 in a fortnight. It's never, ever, ever, ever been anywhere even remotely viable. Until this week, because they said, well, actually, for whatever it is, $99, you pay us $99 a year, and in return, you can upload as much stuff as you can possibly upload. It's not to say that once we start uploading stuff, they might have a change of heart and decide it doesn't stand up, because that's happened to us before. We've signed up to unlimited services, and then...
They're not unlimited.
Then they decide, actually, some podcast consumes so much bandwidth that it's not on. So that could still happen, but at the moment... It's a good step forward.
In the comments, Jordan has said, so now the return of video shows. Well, it paves the way for that kind of thing.
No, it doesn't, Jordan. No, Jordan wasn't listening. It's audio only.
No, but if we pay less money on that, it paves the way for that kind of thing.
Potentially. I think video is still a major, major problem. We haven't... Vimeo is the closest thing to SoundCloud for video, and that is... still way too expensive for us. If Vimeo also have a change of heart and say, actually, you can upload as much video as you could possibly make for a fixed fee that you can afford, if they do the same thing effectively SoundCloud have just done, then sign us up and then we can do videos. But I think for the rest of this season, it puts the spotlight firmly on audio. Live audio, pre-recorded audio, any kind of audio show you can think of, we can create it and we can release it without any problems.
I'm not putting that bit in.
Oh, why not?
Because I said it was fine and it isn't fine.
Okay.
I went, yeah, that's fine. We'll do that. And then you said no.
No. Well, it's a good point. It's a fair argument. It's just that, yeah. Well, all we've nailed one half of our multimedia content problem. And now we have to go and nail the other bit. But at the moment, we can't do that. The thing is, it's a bit of an obsession keeping on top of this stuff. And the cost of bandwidth is dropping every quarter. And we're keeping an eye on it, but it's still not dropped to a point that we can afford it. I think our current pricing is 8p per gig for video. And you get to a terabyte a month and it gets like, what's that, 200... somewhere in the region of about £200 and something a month, the amount of bandwidth we need for video. We still can't afford to do that yet. But watch this space. If more and more people come along with cheaper and cheaper solutions, then we can totally right now we can do as many audio streaming shows as we like because cost is so minimal, and now we can release them, and cost is also minimal. It's no problem. Just time now and inspiration, I guess. Motivation.
So that just sounds like you're making us more work to do. And yet at the beginning, you said 5 shows we've done in 2 weeks. That's too much like hard work.
Yeah, there is a limit on what the human body can take what we are able to produce in our spare time. And that hasn't changed.
Although I think we have been trying to get to the point where we are the limiting factor and not the technology.
We're
moving there all the time.
Yes, we are getting closer and closer. Do join us again. There will be more Side Podcast streaming ahead of the next Grand Prix, which is in a couple of weeks. Where are we going? China? Is that where we are next?
We're not going to China.
No, Formula One is going to China.
Apparently it's quite hard to get a visa.
We'll be staying right here.
Yes.
And discussing it. Do join us. Is that okay?
Yes.
The ending was better than the beginning. Did anyone stick around for that?
We have lots of people still.
Okay.
What you don't understand is that people know that it's not always easy. You know?
Well, yeah. I invite them to come up here and try this. But the thing is, if I did, they'd probably all volunteer to do that.
They'd probably be far better than we are. We'd be out of a job.
I surrendered the Twitter account over Christmas and six people offered to replace me here.
That's true, you did.
People are gagging to replace me. I think most people turn up in the thing to see when I finally have a breakdown and they can have a go.
Yeah,
is that what it is?
Maybe. Well, we're one step closer, it seems like. Also, what you don't understand is that the people, they love you and they support you.
In my most hopeless hour.
Exactly.
No.
No, I was going to say, I'm sure you've been more hopeless than that. And then I realised that wasn't really a compliment and probably should just leave it.
Can you follow Robin's link to rodent update? Because I'm curious what that says.
Oh, do I have to?
Yeah.
Pit pass?
Yeah, it's pit pass. Yeah, well, I don't know. They're not. Do you know what? I saw that GrandPrix.com, which is Joe's old site, are now using GMM this week. So Pit Pass, you know, by comparison, are saints.
They have the full, that story is essentially the full statement thing, the memo thing that I was talking about. And they've just prefaced it with, it says, it appears that mice, similar to the one pictured, have got...
You are joking!
No, have got into the race control system.
What do you mean similar to... It's just a picture of a mouse, right?
Yeah.
No one needs a picture of a mouse to know what a mouse looks like.
They don't substantiate the mice thing, though.
Right, okay. Goodness.
But someone is saying it, so...
But Sian, I said this show download is 87 meg, which sounds right. It's 128 kilobits a second quality. And therefore it's coming to the iPhone in full quality, which means that you're paying for the full rate. So, that's essentially, what's that?
Is that? Are you doing maths?
No, I'm just trying to work out, because I don't know what people's... I'm just wondering whether it helps me or not. 87 meg is understandable as a bandwidth quantity.
You know you're scaring all the first-time people away.
Sorry.
At this point. I don't care what you're talking about.
Before the show, I was merely questioning whether Lou could join us from her car on her iPhone. And she said she didn't have unlimited data and she didn't have any headphones. The headphones thing you could solve pretty easily, but you would still have to work out whether or not it was worth listening to Side Podcast if it cost you roughly 90 megabytes of download per live show. And actually, that's probably too expensive. If you were on a capped whatever, we'd have to find out what Lou is capped at. I would assume it's a couple of gig, but if we did one of these every week, you'd soon chew through your data. So maybe that's not so good. I sort of assumed that the iPhone would take a lower quality stream, but it's clearly taken the full stereo quality 128 meg stream.
Well, there you go. I have absolutely nothing to say to that. And I think that's it. I think we're done. We're all wrapped up. Again, thanks to everyone. We love you all. It's been brilliant first 2 weeks of the season. And we've got a bit of a break now, but there'll still be this weekend. There's all kinds of things going on in the live events. We've got the boat race and Doctor Who returns, and there'll be a hangout on Sunday, Easter Sunday. So bring your chocolate. So just stick with us and we'll be back for more in China, I guess. Probably not going to do a show till nearer the time then, I suppose.